Megillah related.
It does.
Everything in the Megillah happens very, very quickly. And this is something that's taken out of context, but it's something that the Sfarim speak about quite a bit. In Parakei Pasakei, Ma'aru is Haman. Bring Haman quickly to the party. Vav, Yud, Maher, Kach, Zalavush, quickly. Take the clothing, dress up Mordechai, get him out there. Vav, Yud, Dalet, Vayavhilu, Lahavias Haman. They quickly brought Haman to the party. Everything was so quick. As soon as HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that there was going to be a Geula, everything was quick. The fact is, the whole Purim story, I mean, it did not include the Suda of Achashverosh, and not including, you know, finding a wife, you know, to take over for Vashti. The real story of Purim, where Haman goes to Achashverosh and says, I want to destroy the Jews. Mordechai goes to Esther and says, go save the Jews. And Esther saves the Jews is a total of 3 days. Not even 3 days altogether. It's less than 3 days. It's really quick. Although it seems like it was a drawn out period and everything was going, but it was over Pesach. It seems to me it was Yud Gimel Nisan, where Haman went to Achashverosh. That night, which was Bidikas Chometz night, that's when Mordechai had the dream. He went the next morning, Esther had them fast, and it was the second Suda of Pesach, the second Seder, where Haman was killed. Haman was killed right after that. It was the next morning where they hung him. I mean, it's unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable, that it happened so quickly. It's very similar to what happened to Yosef. When Yosef Tzadik was told that he was going to be taken out of the pit and everything was going to be over, they ran him out of the pit, but assuming a board, they brought him out so quickly from the pit. When it came to the Geula, they grabbed him out. They didn't have any time to do anything. There was no time. Yosef is sitting, according to the Me'ashi Loach, he was sitting and crying all night long. It was the first night. For 12 years he had been able to take it. For 12 years he sat there and he cried and he cried and he was fine and perfectly fine. And then that 12th year, that night of Rosh Hashanah, he was bawling his eyes out. He couldn't sleep all night long. The next morning, he was taken out of the pit as quickly as he could. They cut his hair, they changed his clothing, threw him in front of Paro. As if nobody expected it. Because that's the way a Geula is when it comes to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. When the time for the Geula comes, it happens like that. And no one has any clue, no one has any idea, it just happens. It's as quick as you can possibly imagine. You know why? Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't like laziness. Kaddish Baruch Hu does not like atzlus in any way, shape, or form. Chazal and Sukkah Ninvav and Levay is bring down by Mishmeres Bilga. Mishmeres Bilga did one of two different things that they did wrong in order to lose their tabas, their chalon, and everything they had when it came to their spot in the Beis HaMikdash. They had to eat in a separate place because they came late once to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. All Mishmeres Bilga, the whole Mishmar, they came late once. That all they made a gezeira all on Mishmeres Bilga. They're not allowed to serve in the proper fashion. Because they came late once, not twice, they had no warnings. Just one time, they came late to davening, and that was it. All Mishmeres Bilga was taken out for the rest of time. The rest of all time. It's one opinion. Brachos Men Gimel Beis. The last Talmud Chacham in the Beis Medrash. The last Talmud Chacham in the Beis Medrash is called a Poshea the Otzil. That's what he's called. Poshea the Otzil. The person is saying, the last one to come to the Beis Medrash. Poshea the Otzil, what are you doing? You're the last guy to come to Morning Seder. The last guy to make it to the Musar Shmuz. It's right there. That guy is a Poshea the Otzil right there. That's him. Psachim, Samachayim and Aleph. The last group for the Korban Pesach. The last group, and it has to be somebody. Somebody has to be in the final group for the Korban Pesach. Somebody has to be the last one. But that last group, their name was the Kas HaTzlanim, the group of lazy people. Why? They should have been quicker. They should have gone first. They should have done it a little bit quicker. That's what we're saying to them. We're saying to them, you should have gone quicker than where you were up until now. Throughout Mishle, if you've ever read through Mishle, and it's big, I understand that, but it's a tremendous safer. Shlomo is Megane, all the people that are lazy. He goes on for pasuk after pasuk after pasuk after pasuk. Each one is going on about lazy people and how it's absolutely terrible. The one time that Shlomo Melech slept in was the day that the Beis HaMikdash was supposed to be consecrated. It was because he had married Bas Paro. Bas Paro pulled a trick on him. She didn't realize. And because of that, the Beis HaMikdash was never the same. Even the first Beis HaMikdash wasn't what it could have been because Shlomo Melech was lazy. Chazanish says, a school. I don't even understand why this is a school. I'll be honest with you. I read it from Chaim Kanievsky. But the fact that it is a school, to not forget something is to do it immediately. You're not going to forget it because you just did it. That's the school to not forget something. Just do it right then and there. I mean, it's sensible. It makes so much sense. You get up, you know you're supposed to do something, so just do it. That's what it is. So let's talk about motivation for a second. How do we motivate ourselves, and how do we get ourselves to stop being these lazy nobodies? That chair and that chair and that chair and that chair and that chair. What do we do about all those guys who did not motivate themselves, aside from make them listen to this? What can we do to help them motivate themselves? So number one, reporters once asked Dr. J. He was not a real doctor. Right, but yes, Julius Irving, famous basketball player. They once asked him if he could touch the top of the backboard. He had such a tremendous jumping ability, and back then there wasn't so proficient within many basketball players, that they asked him, could he touch the top of the backboard? So he responded, put a $20 bill on top of that backboard and let's see. Let's go see. If you're properly motivated, $20. I mean, for now, that's like, you know, for these basketball players, like, put $7 million up there. Maybe not. It's not it. It's unbelievable. You know, they said, I just read about the slam dunk contest. The guys who are in the slam dunk contest, I've never heard of their names before in my life. I've never heard of them. They're just, they're seriously, they could be high school players for all I know. Like, these guys just got up there and they're playing the basketball. I have no clue. When it said who won the basketball contest, the slam dunk contest, I mean, I remember, I'm sure Reverend Sheinfeld does as well, that back in the day, it was Michael Jordan, it was like Sean Kemp, it was like all these players that were great players in the NBA, they were doing the slam dunk contest. Now it's like, you know, nobody will do it. So they asked LeBron James, what would it take for you to get the slam dunk contest? I believe the word, I don't have it down, I believe he said $20 million. $20 million. The winner of the slam dunk contest gets $20 million, then I'll do it. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, that's like a day's work for LeBron James. That's how much money he makes per day. But it's just absolutely unbelievable. But that's what Dr. J said. Put up a $20 bill up there, and I'll see. And I'll see if I can reach the top of the backboard. I'll tell you. That's number one. Number two, Rabbi David Kaplan. I read this in a book called Impact. By Rabbi David Kaplan.
Which one?
Impact.
Is that
15? I know, but Impact.
Zero.
That one. So either way, he couldn't get a hang of stick shift in his car. Couldn't get a hang of stick shift. I don't know if anybody here has learned how to drive stick shift. I've tried it before in my life. It's extremely difficult to do. You get used to it. You're just not used to the clutch. So he could just get around, right? And he told his dad, after his dad is trying to teach him, he tried once, he tried twice, he tried a third time. Rabbi Kaplan just couldn't do it. He couldn't get a hold of the clutch. He just didn't understand what he's doing. So his father said to him, okay, you should know your mom learned how to do it really quickly. Rabbi Kaplan said, in 5 minutes, he was the best clutch driver you could possibly imagine. He was a stick shift driver that just nobody could stop him. He was like the best, and he couldn't drive any car except for stick shift. When you're properly motivated to do something because you know your mom can do it, then you're going to go ahead and do it. That's number two. Number three, young Talmud Chacham, it does not say his name, came to the Mir Yeshiva in Europe. Rabbi Ruchem Lubavitz, who was the Mashkiach at the time in the Mir, asked him why he came, and the young man said, the reason why I came is because I wanted to hear Musar Shmuzin for the Aseret Mechuvah. He came right before Rosh Hashanah. He wanted to hear the Musar Shmuzin the Rabbi Yeruchim was going to give for Rosh Hashanah, for the Aseret Mechuvah, Shabbat Shuvah, Yom Kippur, what was going to be. So he came, he just wanted to hear the Musar Shmuzin. So Rabbi Yeruchim said he could stay, but he had to pay for it. In order for him to hear the Shmuzin, he had to pay money. So the Bachar gladly did it. He took out money, paid Rabbi Yeruchim, paid the yeshiva, whatever it was, and paid to be able to stay for the Shmuzin. Here at the Shmuzin, and the Shmuzin were all about avoiding machlokas, avoiding arguments, and staying out of different arguments between one person and another. Okay, so you just want to stay away from it. Later on, this young man became a Rav. He ended up becoming a Rav of a town, and a big machlokas broke out in the town, a huge machlokas. But this guy, because he had learned from Yeruchim years ago about the pitfalls of being involved in machlokas, of not getting involved, he refused to get involved. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. When the machlokas had calmed down, settled down, and everything was okay, he decided he wanted to go pay a visit to Rabbi Yeruchim to go tell him what had happened. So he went to the Mir, went to go visit Rabbi Yeruchim, and told Rabbi Yeruchim, you know, the Musar Shmuzin, and you told me years ago, I just want you to know, it worked. I kept myself entirely out of machlokas. Rabbi Yeruchim said, I'm not surprised. Not surprised. I saw you, and I figured that you'd eventually be a Rav of a city. And you should know that being a Rav of a city always comes with its own pitfalls, but one of the major issues that come up is the issue of machlokas when you're a Rav. Thank God, I have no idea what that's talking about, but machlokas is something that you get very majorly involved with. So, Rabbi Yeruchim said, I wanted to make sure that you would hear me, and it wouldn't go in one ear and out the other. So I made you pay for it. Because when you pay for something, you get more involved, and you feel like you have to be there. because you just paid for it. You're not going to miss something if you pay for it. Anybody, if you would have to pay lunch for every day when you ate lunch here, you would eat lunch here even if they were serving garbage. You would eat here. I'm paying for it. I'm going to go ahead and eat it. If you're paying for it anyway, it's there. Now, said Rabbi Rucham, you can have your money back. And he paid him back. Took the money out, gave him his money, gave it right back. He just wanted to make sure that he understood it. Story number three. Story number four. When Mordechai Gifter of Tells used to collect pictures of Gedolim. I don't know what he had back then, but he used to collect pictures of Gedolim. You know, Rav Gifter has an unbelievable story of how he grew up in America. I mean, he's not one of the European, you know, the Rabbanim that came from Europe, that whatever. He was an American boy. An American boy who played baseball, was involved in sports and everything. He went to Europe, he learned Torah, he learned by Tells, and ended up becoming a huge Rosh Yeshiva of Tells Cleveland. I mean, we're not, Rav Gifter is unbelievable. So he used to have a Gedolim album. And in the Gedolim album, he left one space open. He left it open, and he wrote in it a note. Mordechai, if you learn well, you'll end up here. But if you don't, then you'll remain outside of the album. It's a pretty good motivation tool. He made it in, by the way. I don't know if he put himself in or one of his kids put himself in, but eventually Mordechai Gifter made it inside. So let's talk about these four examples. We just gave four examples of motivation, but each one of them has a different point that you can make that allows you to be able to do something. So number one, money is absolutely motivating. If you pay yourself to do something, if somehow you know that somebody's going to pay you to do something, it works. Money definitely works. It does depend, though, on what you need and what you want. If a person doesn't need the money because he has unlimited, you know, allowance, or he himself is making thousands or even millions of dollars, if a person is like that, then it doesn't really work so much to be able to say to a person, okay, I'm going to get all this money, I'm going to take this money. It just doesn't work that way. So money is unbelievably motivating and very, very captivating. It's able to get your attention, it's able to make you do something, but unfortunately it doesn't always help you. It doesn't always help you. The key is to create prizes and gifts for yourself that you know you want and you need. Whatever it is, and everybody knows themselves the best, what is it that you want? I, of course, could say to myself, every time that I do X, I'm going to go get myself a saltwater fish. That's great. But eventually I'm going to run out of room in my saltwater tank, right? And then what do? Then I buy myself a whole new tank? I mean, that's just not part of my deal. So that's not going to work. You have to do something that you know you're going to want every single time, and do something that's going to work. It's not going to bring you down. Something that's going to work for you. And it doesn't have to be money. It could just be something motivating, something that you want to do, something you want to get for yourself. You just wouldn't do it because of X, Y, and Z. Now you go ahead and do it. That's one key motivation factor. So for example, a person wants to get himself up for chakras, or get himself up before 1:30 in the afternoon. So one motivating factor is saying to himself, if I get up at 7:20 this morning, right, if I get up tomorrow morning, if I get up at 7:20, then I'm going to promise myself that I'm going to, I don't know, take a shower. That's a nice thing. I'm going to buy myself a new toothbrush. I'm going to go get myself something good. For me, I think it would mostly be food, because you can see how much I eat. So I would probably go with something that's food, and it would just be something easy. I would just say, like, I'll go buy myself, I don't know, like something that I really, really want, like a Reese's peanut butter cup. That would be perfect. Right? I'll go buy myself something like that. If you motivate yourself with something that will captivate your attention or make you have something that you wanted, you just didn't want to go ahead and get, all of a sudden it becomes something, and then you challenge yourself even further. It's not about one day. It's about 5 days in a row. It's about 10 days in a row. It's about a month in a row. And you can do anything that has to do with that. And you can motivate yourself with money. Sometimes that works out really well, but you need to have goals, and you need to have prizes, you need to have something that's going to work with something like this. Number two, a huge, huge motivation factor is jealousy. Jealousy is absolutely unbelievable. When a person is jealous of other people, this can be used in a very, very good way. Because kinas sof from tar b'chokhma. When you have jealousy of other great people, that can increase the wisdom with other people. You see other people around, and you can become better. I hate to say it about myself, but I think that's the only reason why I sat in the base medrash for my first year in yeshiva. I don't think there was any other reason. I wanted to make sure that I was at least as good as the best guy in the base medrash. So if I couldn't do it with my chokhmah, if I wasn't smart enough, up to do it. At least I'd be there with my asmada. So the guy would stay there, and I tried to do at least as much. Sometimes I couldn't do it, so I didn't do it, and I tried to make myself as consistent as possible. It's not always that good your first year in Eretz Yisrael, as most of you guys know. But I tried my absolute hardest. But that jealousy allowed me to understand there's more to it than just that. And soon it became that I wanted to be there instead of just I'm doing it in order to knock out that guy. Soon it becomes something really good instead of just yet another thing that you're doing. That's what can be created from all this. That's the idea behind it. So jealousy can work if it's used in the proper context. If you use it in the wrong context, you just say, like, I hate that guy, I can't believe that guy, and I just want that guy to go wrong, then unfortunately that's where Lashon Hara stems, that's where bad things happen, and jealousy can be used in the worst way possible, where instead of building yourself up, you're knocking him down. And you're not allowing him to be in the Beis Medrash because you're saying to yourself, well, I can't be there, so I don't want him to be there either. But if used properly, then jealousy can work. You're jealous of your mom that she can drive stick shift. So yeah, you're going to teach yourself how to drive stick shift, and you're going to try to outdo whoever it is. That's the idea behind it. Again, can be used good or can be used bad. Number three, once you put your effort or your money or your soul into it, it automatically pushes you forward. Automatically pushes you forward. There was a big machlokas when the yeshiva program at Yeshurun first started, whether or not we should charge guys to be inside the program. I still feel I was wrong, but I want to make sure the numbers were there. I always said I'm not charging anybody to be in the program, you know, to sit and learn with me, because I wanted them to come. And I felt like they wouldn't come. At the end, now that I'm looking back and in hindsight, I think it would have been smart to charge people to come. Even if it would have been a nominal fee of $25 or $50 a day. If you pay $50 a month or something like that. If you pay $50 for the month, you're going to show up. Because you feel bad when you paid for something you don't show up. It does work that way. Those types of concepts are there. If you put your money or your soul or your effort or something into it, then you're going to want to continue. If you already put a couple days into something, you're going to want to finish it. Your laziness will grab onto you and say, don't worry about it, you don't need to finish it, it'll be fine. But the whole point of it is to work on yourself enough so that once you try hard, you will be able to accomplish it. And that's the idea behind number three, the case with Rabbi Yeruchim. If you paid to hear the speeches, then you're going to listen to it. But if it's just free, it just happens all the time, it's just there, it's not always that shaykh. If you noticed, you hear me every week. Okay, you hear me every week, sometimes every other week, but pretty much every week. It's not the same as if when you hear me once a year. I know what it's like going to NCSY and talking to these kids at Yarchei Kala. They hear me once a year, so I can give all my jokes in one big speech, while you guys have to spread them out into different areas, because I only have 8 jokes, so it's not going to work that well. If I go ahead and I say it over to one person, it's always that way. A speaker who comes in for one time, goes ahead and speaks to people, you get unbelievably inspired, motivated. You sit there and you're like, wow, that guy's awesome. But when you listen to him for a while, and you hear him again and again and again, it's just not the same. It's just absolutely not the same. It's like that by everybody. Absolutely everybody. Rip Wolfson, Rip Short, they're great when they come in and they speak for that one time. If you'd be listening to Rip Wolfson every single day, your ears are just filled with gematrias. You have gematrias pouring out of your ears. You're going to sit there, you're going to be like 12, 13, 17. I don't even know what to do with myself. Sometimes it's too much for certain people, and I totally understand that. I completely understand that. That's the idea of once you put your money into it and you say, I'm going to do this once, I'm going to push myself to go, I'm going to find myself there, you become sufficiently motivated. And it's funny, because the speech that you push yourself to go to that you thought you'd never be able to make, you never thought you'd be able to make the Shalosh Shuddis Drasha by a big rub, but you tried once and you said, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway, you pushed yourself and you went, is the best speech you ever heard in your life. I never would have imagined, if I would have missed that, I wouldn't have been able to go on with my life. It's because you put your effort into it. It's nothing, to say it this way, it's not what the Rav said, it's what you heard. It's the point that you heard it and you felt that it was so important to you. That's what was so shy to it. That's why it was so important to you. That's what you have to start thinking to yourself. If you put your effort into it and you push yourself to go, even though you don't want to, then all of a sudden it becomes something. And so too when it comes to paying for something, when you put your money into it, it works. That's the motivating factor. And that can also be used to be able to get to Seder on time or to get to davening on time. You want to really push yourself? Really push yourself. It's not about finding yourself. It's that it's put your effort into something, meaning pay someone else for the month of going to Shacharis, of going to Seder, just to go. you'll feel like you have to go. And then at the end of the month, if the person feels like it, he can return the money to you. Try it. It's an awesome little feeling. It's just, if you're not going to be able to pay yourself, then give it to someone else. And see, if I put my money into it, then I want to really make it happen for me. I paid for this, so I want to really do it. But number four is by far the best. Self-motivation. That's by far the biggest key and the greatest solution to anything in life. Rick Gifter motivated himself. Only by putting inside his little thing, you can be in here if you work hard enough. That's it. That's simply it. I was not at all. I mean, I don't even remember. My dad is not a big basketball fan. He's a big baseball and a big football fan. But I never played basketball growing up. Never. Although we had a hoop in our backyard, but never used it. I wasn't a big basketball guy. I just loved baseball. I loved football. But I wasn't a big basketball guy. And I was a skinny little kid, right? And I was small up until freshman and a half year. So, like, the whole time, like, I never really played basketball. It just wasn't my sport. But I sat there, and you got to say it for what it is. I mean, I was jealous. I wanted to be on the basketball team. I wanted really badly to be on the basketball team. And I went throughout my whole freshman year. I was really upset that I couldn't do anything, and I was really upset about it. So my whole summer, in between my freshman and sophomore year, although I worked as a counselor at a camp, every time I walked around after camp, I'd be holding a basketball and dribbling a basketball wherever I went. I would always be holding a basketball. I went to the J all the time to play basketball after camp, to play on Motzei Shabbos, to do whatever. Everything. I literally lived, and of course I learned a lot of Torah, but I lived and breathed basketball for that after freshman, before sophomore year. And I did it. I did everything I possibly could to be able to do it. And why? Jealousy was a motivation, but it wasn't that. It's that I really wanted to do it. I was self-motivated. I put myself into it. I gave myself the ball, and I said, I'm just going to do it. Everywhere I went, I had it with me, and I just pushed myself to be able to do it. If you want to go out and get it, you just do it. Don't ask any questions. Just self-motivate yourself and put it yourself. Make a note. Just put it somewhere. And just say on top of your alarm clock, have that note that says, don't press snooze. If you want to be a great person, don't press snooze. And then all of a sudden things are different. I still make fun of a guy who could never come here for chakras. He always said, I got to go to the 8:30 minion every day. I got to make it to 8:30. I got to do it. And that guy wakes up at 5:45 in the morning every single morning. Every single morning. Because his job requires him to get up at 5:45 in the morning. I'm not even talking about the guy who's still in the dorm. I'm talking about somebody else who was not in the dorm and could not make it. I can't wake up. I can't do it. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure he got a job that you wake up at 5:45. So when he goes up to Shemayim and they ask him, in yeshiva, why couldn't you get it? I just couldn't. So why could you do it when you were working? Oh, time changed. Nothing changed. Your motivation changed. When your job is pushing you to be there, and it's not just, well, it's just Seder. When it's not like that, then all of a sudden everything about you changes and you motivate yourself to do something. See, Haman got up and got what he wanted. He went out and did everything. He charged himself. He put himself into a position of power. The only way to defeat your Yetzirah, the only way to do what you really want to do is just go. Just get yourself up and just go and find it for yourself. Motivate yourself to be able to do it. And that's Zrizus. If not for the fact that the Jews gave their Chatzi Shkolin beforehand, if they wouldn't have been Zariz in donating to the Mishkan, then Haman's Shkolin would have defeated us. But we were motivated enough beforehand so that his motivation was mitigated by the motivation that we had when we gave our Shkolin. When Bilam got up and saddled his donkey to go run, to go curse out Klal Yisrael, if not for Avraham Avinu doing the exact same thing years earlier, saddling his donkey in order to go do the Akedah, to get up and use that Zrizus in the right way, Bilam would have won. And we would have been cursed. There's a level to do these types of things. Here's what Purim is. Purim is a jump start. It's a jump start where you get this type of, this feeling. And whether you're drinking or you're not drinking, whether you're over 21 or you're under 21, whatever you need in order to get that jump start, you do it. I should be very careful with how I say that. Do not do anything illegal. The most things that you can do in order to get yourself that jump start, go ahead and do it. Because that's the point of what Purim is supposed to be. We've had a really slow last couple weeks. The last couple weeks have been really slow and really off. You can blame You could blame the fact that the other kids had off for President's Day. I'm sure President's Day is such a hush of a holiday. I'm sure you all would have celebrated Lincoln. I don't even, none of you even know when Lincoln's birthday was. Or Washington's.
It was last
November 15th.
Yeah, it was like, wait, wasn't it? Sure. I mean, come on, guys. You really think that we should get off for President's Day? You're in yeshiva. Yeah, but it's a Monday. I don't understand. You're in yeshiva. It's been a really slow... And before that, don't tell me, well, it's leading up to President's Day. And then the week before that was what? Well, it was 3 weeks after winter vacation. I mean, come on, guys. It's just like, where are we going? What is the week where we can say, well, everything's going well now? What week is that going to be? Well, is it 1 week in the middle of November where we're like, oh, that's it, and then we're done? That's it? Every week, there has to be some type of motivation. Every week there has to be something that's pushing you, that's going to make you go. And if you can't do it, find it now. Because we have another 3 weeks, basically, until this month is over. 3 weeks until it's all over altogether. And then what? And then what? You have a week after Purim, and I'm sure there's going to be the excuse of, well, it's Shushan Purim. And then it's going to be, it's 2 days after Purim. And then it's going to be, it's 3 days after Purim. And then it's going to be what? Then it's going to be, well, I had a project due. And then it's going to be the next week, in which is like, oh, I'm already in Nissan mode. Oh, the guy's already coming back from Eretz Yisrael. Right? Oh, then there's Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Nissan. It's a big day. Everybody has to take a day off. And all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm thinking about Pesach already. And then it's finals, right? Which you don't have until after Pesach, but you have to prepare. Right? And then everything goes on. And then what? And then it's almost vacation. So since it's almost vacation, I got to take that day off. And I'm not feeling so good anyway because it's, you know, really warm in my room and cold outside. So I'm pretending I'm sick. I'm sure that there's a lot going on. But motivate yourselves and push yourselves to do it because there is absolutely no reason why there's 12 guys in a base medrash for chakras at 7:30. Shouldn't say that. At 7:48. There's actually one at 7:30, but I wouldn't even know that. Let's be honest. Where are we? What's going on with us? Why are we not there? Why aren't we pushing ourselves to be better? And why isn't it that if you're able to make it for Rabbi Sussman's shir at 9 o'clock or at 8:45 on a Monday or a Wednesday, you better believe you can make it to a Seder at 9:15 or 9:30. That should be obvious. That should be absolutely obvious. If you can make it to that, then you certainly can make it on time to a 1:45 mincha or to a 2 o'clock seder for Musar, and then to be able to stay for as long as you possibly can. For a night seder, what happened to 9 o'clock night seder? I'm not so sure how it started being 9:07. I'm pretty sure guys are being paid for this. I don't know if you guys know Kosher Mishpat. It's a big sefer in Shulchan Aruch. I'm 99% positive it says, that's usher. You can't come late if you're being paid to do it. You can't. That's usher, period. Unless you make up the time. And you tell me if you made up the time. Tell me if you made up those 7, 8, 9 minutes. Oh, Rabbi Ginsburg wasn't there on time. Oh, Rabbi Olsen wasn't there on time. Oh, let me check for that Heter. Gehenim. That's what I just wrote. That's what it is. That's not what it is. I don't understand what else it could be. If you're on time for lunch, then be on time for Seder. If you're going to be on time to get there for dinner, you got there right on time, right when it first started. If you're going to be on time for a class, you better believe you have to be there on time for Seder. And to waltz in at 10:40 or 10:30 or 10:10 and say like, oh, but I couldn't wake up. Would you have woken up for a class or not? If this is a class and it was starting at 9:30, would you have been there or would you not have been there? And if your answer is no, I wouldn't have been there anyway, then you're pathetic. I don't want, fine, there's nothing I can do about that. If your answer is yes, I would have been, but this is Seder, then start thinking what your priorities are. Start thinking, where am I supposed to be and what am I doing? Because this isn't it. This is not the answer. And again, the excuse cannot be, it's almost Purim. It's, come on. It's almost February 19th. That's not enough for me. I need more than just that. That should be the push. Give you 4 motivating keys. Number 1, money. Number 2, jealousy. Number 3, putting your effort into it. Number 4, self-motivation. You have those 4 choices. It's up to you to do it. Nobody's going to force you. There's no alarm clock in the world yet that can punch you, throw you out of bed, and throw water on you like I had to do to Ari this morning. There's nothing like that. But I'm telling you that the greatest motivation is pouring water on a person. They get cold, they didn't expect it, they have no idea. And I don't like doing that. I like doing that to my kids. I don't like doing that to guys. That's just not, that shouldn't be happening. Wake yourselves up, get yourselves to Seder on time, and make sure that you're there. Make sure that when you get to Seder, it's not like, oh, now I made it to Seder on time. It's 9:15. Perfect. I got to get a coffee. No, dudes. That's not what you do. You get a coffee beforehand. You go to the bathroom beforehand. You talk to the guys beforehand. You do your homework beforehand. Everything you're supposed to do, finish up before Seder. That Seder is Seder, not make up time for anything that I was supposed to do. Unbelievable. You like that?